Welcome back to the White Lotus Podcast here on Post-Show Recaps. It's the Feedback Variety Hour, my favorite. My name is Ariel, and I am joined by my co-host, as always, Dr. Amanda. How are you?
I am doing great. This is our Variety Hour. Does that mean that we only have an hour to talk, Ariel? What happens if we go over?
No, it's like an hour, but like not including ads. So okay. Like we can go as long as we want, really. We decide and we wait. It's really like up to the broadcast networks to decide how long they want to cut us. That's their problem. But this episode had a lot of, I wouldn't say maybe teenage angst, but like early adult angst. These people, these younger characters feel like they might as well be teenagers. So we needed someone to come in, queen of the 90s, someone who's very familiar with teenage angst.
Somebody who is never a drip, not depressing, always very, very fun to talk to. We have with us today the great Jess Sterling.
Buongiorno.
Ciao, ciao.
Bonjour to you as well, Jess. How are you doing?
I am so thrilled to be here. I have so many thoughts. I was very, very excited specifically about this episode when I started watching it, because if I wasn't like hiding my face behind a pillow cringing at some of these scenes, I was like shouting at my TV screen like, yes, come on. Like, it had everything, and it's completely solidified Lucia and Mia as like, oh my god, top of the pack in terms of
total,
just like
queens. Yeah,
entertaining, just entertainment, pure entertainment. Killed me the entire episode.
And they're really like stirring the pot right now, Jess. Like, they're the ones that they're involved with everybody. They're making trouble for Harper and Ethan. They're making trouble for Dominic. They're getting mixed up with Albie. They're drugging the musical entertainment. They're really like, they're really the catalyst of a lot of the action in this episode.
Yeah, and I especially love that at this point, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on her name. What's the name of the woman who like runs the hotel?
Valentina,
that she has just kind of given up on trying to get them out. She's just like, she sees them in the hallway and she's like, oh, buongiorno. Like, just like, you're still here.
I love that she's throwing snide remarks at them. But like, I agree with you. It's she's given up because she can't do anything. She tried, but then
they're guests.
I'm not gonna like pretend that I don't know exactly who you are.
Yes.
But we want to hear from you who you are. You should subscribe to the White Lotus podcast feed. Search White Lotus Post-Show Recaps. If you need the URL for your podcast catchers, it is postshowrecaps.com/White Lotus. Subscribe, rate, review. It's super helpful. We already got the third season, like I said last time, but like, you know, you want to be invited like a VIP guest.
So we want to get Post-Show Recaps. We need our third season too. That's why we need your ratings and reviews. Like, HBO renewed it. That doesn't mean like HBO doesn't pay me. They don't hire me. So you need to give us our 5-star reviews and ratings and subscribe so that so that our personal Valentina, Josh Wiggler, will renew us for another season.
Yeah. Don't pull a Cameron and give us 4 stars and then later come back and give us that extra star.
Be like, I have to go to the bank to get the other star.
I'll leave it at the front desk for you.
No, full 5 stars at the beginning, up front, paid in full.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to pay in full and become a Post-Show Recaps patron, you get ad-free podcasts of the White Lotus.
Wow.
So I'm just saying.
Wow.
It's there for you if you want it. Ay. Let's get into our angst.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. I'm feeling very angsty all of a sudden.
There's so much here. I think like the Portia Albie like situation really came to a head this episode, and I don't know if this is a spicy take, but I'm like, I'm not feeling Albie anymore. And here's the situation. Okay, I feel like we know about his father, we know about his grandfather, we know like he is in these like weird, he's in this third generation, in this 3-generation family trip. And it seems like he's like trying to like tell his, like get inform his his grandparent and his father about like, no, this is the way of the world now. Like, try to be a little bit more, you know, woke or whatever. But part of me is also like, he feels like after he spent like 2 days hanging out with Portia that like she owes him something, like she owes him her time. And at a certain point, I'm just like, oh, we just like read the room, bro. Just like read the room a little bit. Like, Portia doesn't want to hang out with you and listen to you talk about Stanford. Like, she wants to go have fun with Jack and his cute little underwears. Like, she just, that's what she wants to do. She's here for the fun.
Yes. Okay, so Jess, I hear you. And I was very much on that page at the end of episode 3. But let's just play devil's advocate here. For uno momento. And at the very beginning of this episode, Portia does tell Albie that she wishes that they had spent the other night together and basically tells him that she wants to hang out and have a date with him today. Is that not a signal Portia that she is interested?
She is sending mixed signals abound, for sure. Mm-hmm. I think this is what it is. If I could like just take myself out of my body and like read what is happening with Portia right now, she is in a terrible situation. She is stuck with her boss, her needy, greedy baby boss, like in Italy, in a beautiful location, listening to her boss whine constantly. So she's looking for any out possible, right? Like, she's on the move. She is on the hunt for a way to get out of this situation. She sees Albie and she's like, oh yeah, let me go get some fruit, okay? And Tanya's just staring at her the entire time. Part of me is like, yeah, she was doing that because it's kind of like, well, I could be in this awful, awful situation or this like, yeah, okay, decent situation with a guy that like, I really don't think she's attracted to Albie at all. And he's a great looking guy. Like, this is not me saying he's not a good looking
guy. Did that fruit happen to be a peach by any chance?
Oh my God.
His badonk does work though. And let me tell you, HBO giving us man butt constantly, I'm here for it.
That is the HBO way. You will see man butt in most HBO prestige television. I love television. It.
Give me all the man butt in the world. Like,
are owed after generations of non-man butt. Yes, this is just starting to scratch.
Man butt surface. Are the new boobs. That's
truly.
That's true.
Yeah, we are being paid our dues. Mm-hmm. And so we have had like free the man butt. We have seen breasts abound on HBO for years, and now we're just getting paid what we're owed. But no, I think with Albie that she's just not attracted to him in the same way. I think he's just very safe for her. Like, he is a type that maybe you date, right? Like, you date Albie.
So
you
yes.
don't have a one night stand. You don't have a vacation fling with Albie.
So this is why we needed to have Jess come in and talk about this episode, because you have podcasted about Boy Meets World. You've podcasted about Dawson's Creek. Like, you have encountered multiple of these love triangles, right? Where like,
right.
The woman or the girl is deciding between sort of the safe choice, the dependable boyfriend, and the bad boy who's maybe a little bit riskier, maybe isn't going to be treating you as well, but the guy who makes you more excited. Are we looking at this sort of classic teen drama love triangle play out here in The White Lotus?
I think that's exactly what it is. Like, I think when you boil it down, that's exactly what it is. Albie is someone you date. Albie is someone you introduce to your mom. Albie is like a cute, smart guy.
He went to Stanford.
He went a million times. He's going to tell us he went to Stanford. And like, yeah, he is the guy who probably won't cheat on you, who will be very dependable and loyal and save you a beach chair to sit on. Like, just very kind. But like, is that exciting? No. Like, we know what Portia is looking for. Like, she wants excitement. She's talked about this. Like, she just wants to go out and live and have fun. And like, you're telling me a boy from Essex gonna come up to you with that cute British accent talking about how he's wearing his fancy underwears tonight, and you're not gonna be all in on that guy? Get out of here. She has tattoos.
She's only human, Jess.
That's what I'm saying.
She has no, he's a fit bird.
He's so fit. What killed me the most was when they eat dinner together and he's just like, oh, I changed my underwear for you. And she's like, what, did you shit yourself? And like, I was like, Portia is me. I am Portia. This is how we flirt. Did you shit yourself?
She is so much more fun. Like, even taking the boys out of the equation partially, it's like if you just watch Portia's behavior herself when she's interacting with the two of them, she is a much more fun version of herself with Essex boy than with Albie. But what I think is interesting about what she said at breakfast is like, that screams to me of she's not like mourning that she didn't hang out with Albie more. She wishes that she felt that way. It's like, I wish that I felt like I wanted to hang out with you, but I didn't, and I still don't. But like you said, Jess, I'm looking for this life raft, so I guess I feel this way, but I'm not sure.
To put it in Dawson's Creek terms for anybody who has seen it, like, Albie is the Dawson and Jack is the Pacey. Mm-hmm. And like, if you're like, okay, when she's having this like really big issue by the pool, she's like crying, she's upset, she's stuck in Italy with her terrible boss. Like, the Dawson, Albie, is like, you know, comforting her. Are you okay? What's going on? Jack would be like, let's jump in the pool right now, fully clothed. Let's go. Like, he's going to lift you up by
sensitive
being
fun. Sensitive
nips
be damned.
Yes, sensitive nips be damned. He's going to do what's fun. And I think that when you're on vacation, when you're, right, she's a young 20-something, when you're on vacation, you want what's fun. And so I just think, we haven't seen it yet. I think we're still in the sympathy moment for Albie, where we're like, oh, we feel bad for him. Like, he seems to like Portia and he's stuck with his like annoying dad who's a terrible cheater and his grandfather who's just like very out of touch. And so he wants to like meet someone and have fun with them. But I just feel like we're going to get to a point with Albie where he, I don't know, the wounded bird comment really just put me
red
on
flag.
Edge. Yep. And was a red flag of like, oh no, he is the quote unquote nice guy and he has nice guy-itis and feels like he is owed something because he put in time and effort to get to know Portia. And now he feels like she owes him time, you know, to spend with him, to sit on the beach chair instead of hanging out with Jack.
Right. It's very head versus heart. Like, the argument for giving Albie a chance is very intellectual. Like, he checks the boxes. He's cute. He's nice. He's smart.
He went to Stanford.
He went, is that where he went, Ariel? I wasn't sure where he went to college.
I thought it was SUNY Potsdam, but no, it was Stanford.
Turns out it was Stanford. But like, the argument for Jack is like much more like emotional. It's lust. It's fun. And you can tell, like, with Portia's character, that she's maybe somebody who has really gone down an intellectual rabbit hole, maybe during the pandemic, being at home, stuck with her job, thinking about her life. And she wants to break away from that. And Albie is the guy who, like, feeds that. And Jack is the guy who, you know, actually pulls her out of her head and gets her in her body, gets her in the pool, gets her in bed. And that's what she needs to kind of break out of that, like, doom scrolling, being sucked into the discourse type of thing that she's complained about in previous episodes.
Yeah, and I think the vacation point especially is important that Jess pointed out, because this whole thing is on vacation. So I think sometimes it's easy to forget that lens of it, of just like how we see, we've spoken before many times of like how we see ourselves when we are on vacation, the expectations versus the reality versus what we should be doing or what we could be doing and what's the more fun thing that we could be doing. I want to be different. I want to try something else. And as Lucia said, you usually are like, let's fun. That's what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to have fun. And I think I've watched too many Mary-Kate and Ashley movies where I just dream of going on vacation, right? I'm a young 20-something. I'm on vacation. I meet this cute boy and he shows me the whole, like, shows me Italy and we may or may not fall in love, but it's definitely going to be a good time. Like, has everybody else seen Passport to Paris? Because that was my expectation when I was a teenager going on vacation. And I just think that's what Portia wants.
Then there's two of you, and he may potentially not be able to tell you apart.
Yeah. Perhaps. Inside of you, there are two Olsen twins. Okay, so on the other side, Jess, of Portia and Jack, we also have Lucia and Albie. So Albie has a new love interest in this episode. What do we think about Lucia and Albie as a pair?
It's so incestuously gross. It's like you never want father-son to be Eskimo brothers. Like, it's just not okay.
Just no. Mike Bloom was on last week. What's happening?
It's so true, though. Uh-huh. And the worst part is that they could have stopped it, right? Because, like, we have Albie's grandfather who's like, oh, look. Albie is hanging out with the girls I saw coming out of your
room.
But what
does Dominic do at this point?
That he chugs his wine. That's what he does.
But is there something that Dominic could have done?
He texts his son and is like, I think all he does needs to do is text his son. Because I don't think Albie has any idea that Lucia is a sex worker.
Right, absolutely. Agree 100%.
No.
And which so you text him and
but
you're
isn't
like,
isn't that better? Like, isn't it better than him being like, oh, hey, this is a girl that I hired. You know, when we were home in San Francisco and I was trying to get back together with your mom, I was also setting up this sex worker to come and visit me in the hotel. And now this woman that you met that you think you've hit off something really sweet with is actually the sex worker that I've been sleeping with for the past two nights. Like, how does that make anything better, Jess?
No, I think there's a way you do it. I think, okay, so where they're sitting, they can see Lucia and Albie. Yes. And I think all he needs to do is text his son and be like, hey, if that's the girl you were talking about, like, she is kind of dressed like a sex worker and maybe you should be careful. But that's
either way, it all sounds terrible.
As bad as that would be, or I guess good, depending... It also betrays Dominic's, like, I am a changed person, right? It shines a light on the fact that he would know that. Whether you can say the quote-unquote common person would know that or not or suspect.
Well, that's
the
that's
last
what
thing
I was Dom very
wants is to
about.
Remind his son that that is
and
his,
then,
like, habit.
If I was Albie, I'd also be like, ew, my gross dad is trying
You're just
to-
jealous, Dad.
No, that-
It could backfire. Yeah.
Yeah. It would definitely, like, I think that I would see that as judgment or my dad not being woke or judging this woman for the way she
dresses.
And it's like, none of that is good. And I think Albie in the sort of state is he's in and his current relationship with his dad is not going to be like, oh, thanks, Dad. Thanks for looking out.
Thanks, so Dad, for letting me know. I just think
new girlfriend looks like a prostitute.
But I think because here's the thing, and this is not me. This is me saying what that character would say. What is his name? Dominic. I honestly don't
know Dominic is Michael Imperioli's character.
So that Dominic would, I think, not only think that, but would also say that. So it feels realistic that he would say that. But I feel like it's worse to let Albie, like, again, get a BJ from Lucia. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, he's going to owe her money. Like, that's a thing that's going to happen.
Here's what I love. Here's what I love. That's a great distinction. And here's what I actually love about Albie and Lucia together is the effect that they have on each other. Because Albie, this episode was way, way more interesting. Like, in the eyes of Lucia, he's like this innocent puppy, basically. Again, especially compared to some of the
men. She's like, I found my next mark.
Dealt with. But I actually think that she is enjoying that innocence. And to her, it's like, I want to have this fun just in an innocent way, I'm not going to charge him. I'm potentially not even going to reveal that that's something that I do. That's my work, because she's enjoying the way he is treating her, the way that he sees her as just like a regular woman and hasn't like branded her like, oh, she's a sex worker, so I'm going to treat her a certain way. So this idea of like that they see each other in this, they kind of make each other better. I have never found Albie more interesting. And it's because of Lucia. Like, she's such a great character. And of course, she makes him more fun. And he really enjoyed his present at the end. And I think
this is fascinating because I'm of two minds with Lucia, right? I find her absolutely riveting. Anytime she's on my screen, I want to know more. I think the fact that she is pulling away from what she does for work, and the fact that she feels like a sense of shame about, which again, like, this is the society's problem more than it is Lucia's problem, shaming women for what they're doing with their bodies. But like, she feels a sense of shame about it. And she even says to Mia, like, what are we doing? Like, what am I doing? I'm a terrible influence. I've like brought you into this. I've made you a monster.
Drag me into and my shame.
Women who do this always get punished. We get punished in the end.
Yes. Yeah. And so she's in a sense pulling away from that line of work while Mia is really leaning in. But that's a really fascinating point in that, like, it didn't even dawn on me that she might actually like Albie, and nothing against Albie. It was more of like, it felt like she's just finding who's available, right? Like, there's a man, he looks lonely. He looks like he could use me as like a little bit of a little, again, not all sex workers are like always giving their bodies. It's sometimes giving emotional support or like just being there for someone. And it felt like that was what she was doing, especially in the scene when they're in the water and Mia comes up and she's like, which one is the Viagra? And she's like, what? What? I can't hear you. It felt like, and she's like, what did she want? And she's like, oh, I don't know. She always needs something. I don't even care. And it felt very like, she's like, nope, forget her. It's just me and you. I'm here for you, you know?
Well, I do think that, and obviously we'll see, you know, what happens in the next episode. And I think it is ambiguous, but I think that there's a strong possibility that for Lucia, this was pleasure, not business. I think that we see her in this episode, like really reexamining what she's been doing, what she's doing with her life, feeling guilty about it. And I do think that it's Albie's innocence and his interest in her, talking about her English. They talk about how she wants to go to Los Angeles. Like, if you can remember when she tried to have that conversation with Dominic, he was like, I'm in a weird place and I don't really want to talk right now. Let's just have sex. Like,
yeah, no emotional connection.
This was much more like, I think what you said, Ariel, of her just being a young woman, meeting a young guy and having like kind of this innocent flirtation that sort of turns into something more. So I'm very open to the idea that this is like Lucia's not going to charge him for her time, and that this is something that she's entering into in a much more, you know, sort of like for her own, you know, romantic interest.
And he's crazy tall. Like, that's not nothing.
I'm not saying Albie is not attractive. The actor is a very attractive guy.
It's all about personal preference.
Yeah, I'm very open to seeing it from that point of view. It just didn't really dawn on me because Lucia has, like, from the beginning, right? Like, when they get kicked out of Dominic's place, they're like, well, what are we going to do now? And so it felt like, oh, very instinctual for her to find the next, like, lonely guy to move on to. But you're right in that I do think the scene at the bar where we have Portia and Jack making out and Albie like stops mid-sentence. And of course, Lucia picks up on it that like he sees her making out with someone else and he gets this like pang of jealousy. She's like, well, we're not going to let them win. And I thought that was a very kind gesture on her part, because from what we know of Albie, again, this is where Albie and Jack differ greatly. Is Albie being someone who is very like liberal minded, very much of today's world, asks for consent before he kisses, right? Are you okay with me kissing you? Even when he's getting the BJ from Lucia, he's like, I'm about to finish. Is that okay?
Such a generous.
He's a gentleman. He's a gentle lover.
Uh-huh. Ladies, hopefully you can find yourself a man who gives you a little heads up.
In that case, is that scene especially, he's like the little bird, right? That he's like,
is the little bird. And that's the thing, is like, he is very kind, and he's never gonna be the one to like to start the kiss without asking if it's okay. And I think Lucia knows that, right? And so she is like, she's like, no, we're gonna show them what's what. Like, we're gonna make her, they're not gonna win, let's kiss. And I thought that was very like kind of her. And so I'm definitely open to seeing it from your both's point of view. I didn't even consider it, because I'm just like, she's just trying to get by. Like, she's just trying to be a lady in the world, like getting by on what she can.
So this is interesting, because Lucia knows who Albie is, right? Yeah. I mean, she has seen him with Dominic, with Bert. She knows that this is Dominic's son. It's gotta come to pass that Albie's gonna find out about Lucia, right?
It has to. And I think on some level, that's the other part of the excitement. Like, I think it's absolutely true that she's enjoying the way that Albie is treating her, but I think also she's like having fun playing with that fire of the danger of like everyone, of like Dominic finding out, and also, well, I think Dominic more, right? Because she might feel a little bit slighted by him, and perhaps isn't like it enters her mind that Dominic could be upset, and I don't think that's the reason she's doing it at all. Like, I think it organically just comes up.
Yeah,
but she seems like a smart, aware person. And I think it's like, ooh, this is potentially exciting. It's not boring.
Well, that, and she doesn't, we never got the vibe that there were ever any like romantic feelings between her and Dominic. It was always very like transactional.
Very much.
And so I don't think there's ever like jealousy there. But I will say, if we're leaning more towards the side of she doesn't really have true feelings for Albie, or maybe she's treating it more like a job, she knows Dominic has money. And therefore, Albie, as his son, also has money and like has money to spend, right? Like, if even if it's not like a sexual type of thing, even if she's just hanging around with him, going with him places, like he's there and he has money. It's interesting to me that Lucia originally felt like more of the daredevil between her and Mia. But this episode, it very much flipped, where Mia is the one who's taking her time getting ready in Albie's grandfather's room. And Lucia is like, come on, we have to go. Like, we can't get caught. It's almost like the roles have completely reversed.
Yeah. No, Lucia created a monster, and that monster is Mia. This was a really great episode for her. Like, I wonder, Jess, like, do you have any thoughts about where this could go for Mia now? Because like, she tries to shoot her shot and she like almost maybe murders Giuseppe.
You talked about like Lucia creating a monster, and the monster possibly took this man's heart, like, and stepped on it.
Yeah, I was honestly surprised, just like you both were, that she didn't just sit at the piano and start playing without permission anyway. But I think next episode we're going to see Mia as the piano player or the singer, or, you know, whatever. I think she's going to be working at that hotel as a singer. I think they're not going to be able to get someone on short notice or something, and she's already there. So they're just going to say, okay, by all means, like, just do it. But yeah, I don't think there's going to be any repercussions for her. I don't know if that guy died. I mean, I think he's at least going to have to be hospitalized. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was interesting. I guess I didn't really think care about the fact that she was like, oh, he wanted only one pill, and she's like, no, take two. And I'm like, did he not see that they were different pills? Like, if she was giving him one Viagra and one question mark whatever the other pill
Molly
was,
perhaps. Yeah, I thought the same thing, of just like, he was so excited. Also, he's a little older, maybe his vision's not that great. Oh, he didn't even notice
he was having double vision.
The pills were completely different shapes, at least based on like the close-up that we got earlier.
But I love Mia. I think she's very funny. I love that she was like, come on, let's go do it now. And he brings her into a church and she's like, absolutely not. Like, no, like, they're staring at me.
Don't worry. It's deconsecrated, Jeff. It's fine. It's fine.
And Amanda, when you said what she was saying, because again, we get the Italian translations on screen, so we don't actually like, and sometimes it's not a one for one in terms of translations. But when you said she just kept saying disgusting, disgusting, disgusting. It absolutely killed me. She is one of the ones that in the very first episode, she was just kind of there. She didn't really do much for me, but Mia has slowly became one of like my favorite characters, both from her wardrobe, which is just like such a choice. She's wearing like, speaking of Lucia wanting to visit LA, she's wearing California shirt.
Yes, with the fringe and the beads. It's like very Jersey Shore.
Very Jersey.
It is very Jersey Shore, because she's literally standing on a beach in like these iridescent Uggs. Like, and it's just, it's so funny. And I just think she's very fun. I think she's the one who's at this point like living it up. And so I wouldn't be surprised if she's also tagging along. If like Albie and Lucia start hanging out, if she's tagging along as well. But yeah, I'm really interested in seeing Mia, more of Mia and more of like her rise to stardom, because that's what I see for her.
Transport yourself back in time and explore the fascinating and harrowing story of the Titanic's maiden voyage. Now open at Cosi. Don't miss Titanic, the Artifact Exhibition. This epic exhibit features over 200 authentic artifacts recovered from the ocean floor. Discover poignant passenger and crew accounts and majestic recreated interiors, including the iconic Titanic Grand Staircase. Tickets for Titanic, the Artifact Exhibition are on sale now. Book your voyage at Cosi.org.
Yeah, and I've brought this up before of like them for me being like some if not a stand-in, like a definite comp for the two main characters in the My Brilliant Friend mm-hmm. series and HBO TV series, which again I always highly recommend. And the way I'm thinking about it here, like the way one of them has like dark hair, one of them has lighter hair, but more specifically and more importantly, the way that Lucia, the dark haired character, like seems to affect the lighter haired character in this way that like kind of activates her, changes the way she feels about herself and changes the way like she goes through the world. It's very fascinating. I love that.
I'm so glad you brought this up, Ariel, because as we've been talking, I've been thinking about, you know, something that I've wanted to talk more about throughout this series, but that Mia and Lucia have this like very sweet, warm friendship with each other, and like we mm-hmm. see it at different points. Like one of the standout scenes for me is the first time we see Mia play the piano and sing, and you can see that like Lucy is watching her and is just so proud and like so mm-hmm. overcome and like just enjoying her friend and like wishing the best for her. They always compliment each other on how beautiful they look. It's like really, really lovely. And then you take that and you contrast it with what Daphne is going to say about female friendships and what Tanya is going to say about what it means to be a woman and to be friends with women. And it really, it seems like that's a very meaningful contrast, that we do have this female friendship, which is probably one of like the warmest and sweetest relationships in all of the White Lotus season 2 so far. But then we have these other characters who regard female friendships with quite a bit of suspicion.
Yeah, and that's also very Lanu and God, what's her name? Elena. Elena Greco. Greco being the last name of Lucia, which made me like think, one of the things that made me think of My Brilliant Friend. But yeah, like you said, so supportive of each other. Women, like these two women genuinely liking each, I think this is like the more nuanced point, liking each other more than liking themselves, right? Like the way that the other sees them,
they see the best
higher
yes.
and yeah. more lovingly than they see themselves, which I think is very important.
Yeah, they give me big vibes of friends since childhood, who've always like it feels like Lucia has always been the one who has gotten into trouble a little bit more, been a little bit more rambunctious, but that Mia was always by her side.
I'm sorry, I'm like freaking out. This is crazy. It's like we're talking about the other show at the same time. This is incredible.
It just feels like that though, right? Where like Lucia has been the one who's like maybe getting them to trouble, but Mia is always by her side and never mm-hmm. like refuses to not see the beauty in her. Maybe despite the fact that she is a little bit more like a troublemaker.
And I do want to know while we're talking about it, that these two actresses actually knew each other prior to filming, and they auditioned together.
That's adorable.
There are like six different layers. I can't.
That's so cute. But though I think you're so right, especially when you think, even when we're not talking romantic relationships, we're just talking like relationships on the show. Theirs is like the only pure relationship when you think about it, because like you have a Harper and Ethan like having communication issues, like just like something is wrong there. Obviously, we've seen a lot between Cameron and his wife and like the issues they have. Not all is well with Tanya and her husband. It seemed like there's issues in every single relationship cluster except for theirs. For them, the issue is the way society perceives sex work and just the fact that like we don't know their background or anything, like,
and women
we're left to understand that that Lucia would prefer to do something else.
She wants to have a shop.
So it's just like this is what she has to do is what it feels like. Again, I'm not trying to shame anybody. This is purely from what the character is saying.
It's like Giuseppe says, it's like the pretty girls like you get to the front of the line, right? It's like they're using the capital that they have, which as, you know, somebody like Giuseppe thinks is just, you know, their bodies and their attractiveness and the things that they can do for
Giuseppe
men.
The clown.
I hate him. I was so upset with him. Like not for nothing, but like if you're on top of a woman and she's going, ew, ew, ew. How are you continuing? Like, how are you continuing to dry hump her when she is just obviously so not into it? I don't understand. And he's just like, oh yeah, I have a bit of an issue. And she's like, again, Mia, my favorite. She's just like, well, I don't want to have to do this again.
She's like, there's no way. Like, we've come this far and I've already like psyched myself out. Yeah, there is no way I'm going
just back. Like, I'm not letting you dry hump me again. Like, no. We're finishing right now. Like, right now.
I'm not
bring
letting this
porn on your phone.
I'm not letting this church be reconsecrated. We're doing this now.
Truly. And so I love Mia and Lucia. They feel like the purest characters, if that makes sense. Like, they just I don't even know what it is. It's just like they exude happiness and joy, and like, maybe they're not always happy, that's not what I'm trying to say, it's just they exude life as compared to some of these other characters who I feel like are a bit more dour.
Do feel like the beating heart and the vitality of the show. And like, similarly to, I think, with season one, when we talked about like how Quinn, who is a very different type of character, like represented this youth and this future and this hope for something better. I think that we do get that from Lucia and Mia's characters. So they're really, really a delight.
Yeah. I love them as opposed to like, and I, oh my gosh, my heart poured, like I just, my heart poured out for Harper. Mm-hmm. This episode, the complete opposite side of the spectrum. You have Harper, who is like very just jaded and just very cynical about the world around her and always seems to like be looking for all the angles and like, oh, they can't possibly be that happy. There must be something more to
looking
their relationship.
For faults and picking it apart.
Yeah. And then for her to find the condom and I was so I didn't mind Ethan in like the first couple of episodes. I was like, oh, it seems like he just kind of got pulled along on this vacation and he seems like a decent enough guy, but I don't know how dumb he has to be to not realize that when his wife is asking him three different times what happened last night, that she already knows the freaking answer, Ethan. Like, your wife has asked you so many times. How are you not reading her face and telling that she knows something and she's upset by it and she already knows what happened? It just baffles
it's
me.
It's bro code, Jess. Bro code.
What does he say? I want to be inside.
I want to be inside of you. This is my big question. This is my big question for you, Jess. Did Ethan cheat on Harper?
1,000%. He didn't have sex with I rewatched that scene from episode 3 because I wanted to double check I remembered everything. And we see Cameron and Lucia having sex on the couch where the condom was found.
Yes.
However, this is not a situation of Mia kissed Ethan and he immediately was like recoiled and was like, no, thank you. No, he kissed her back. And in my opinion, that is cheating. Everyone has different interpretations of what cheating is, but there's emotional cheating. Like, this was definitely physical cheating. You kissed another woman and you not only kissed her, you lied about it to your wife. And that is, to me, even worse than like the one-off accidental kiss.
So if the kiss happens and then Harper comes back and says what happened last night and Ethan just like tells her everything, all the details, everything, What do you think, like, how do you think that that would have like played out versus what we see?
I'm curious to think whether or not Harper would believe him. It's interesting, right? She finds the condom. Now, I saw someone in our patron Discord, posherrecaps.com/Patreon. Someone had mentioned like, oh, she would know what kind of condoms Ethan has. However, we are just, I guess, assuming that women don't carry condoms. So, like, you don't know that that's not from the woman that he slept
right.
with. But I think that Harper would definitely have had a different reaction in that they maybe would fight it out a little bit versus her just bottling it up and, like, it's eating away at her. You could see she just doesn't know how to process this information that the husband she thought she knew, right? We know they're new to being wealthy. Mm-hmm. And that can very much change people. And I can only imagine that that's what's going on in her head is like, wow, my husband has really changed and he's not the person I thought he was. I think if he comes clean though, it's so much more believable to be like, yeah, Cameron invited these two girls. I really didn't want them here, but they were here anyway. We got super drunk. He fucked one of them on the couch and I kissed someone like it, you know, but I think it's like better than letting this stew and letting her think something else for so long, because it's going to be so much harder. The more lies he tells, the harder it is for him to come back from it. And he's lied 3 times.
Also, he's not dumb, right? I mean, he's acting dumb, but he's not like a stupid person as far as what we've seen. The fact that she keeps asking, he finally says at the end of the night, he's like, what, some version of what is it that you're worried about, or what is it that you think happened? You kind of know because it happened. Like, between what actually happened and what you worry that she might be suspicious of,
he's gaslighting her. This is like, let's call it for what it is.
Yeah, you have to know that she's suspicious of something. Clearly she is. You shouldn't have to ask her. Yep. So, you know, but I don't even know which character he's being. I guess he's being like a little bit of Daphne, a little bit of Cameron.
He's being a little bit Cameron because
he's not being Harper, because Harper would be like, oh, this happened. Like it would have just like come out of, you know, exploded.
To me, the fact that he is saying like, what exactly are you worried about? Is very like he is gaslighting her because he knows what she's worried about and she has every right to be worried about it because it actually happened. I really, really was upset with him when he goes, oh, we met some men, some women, no one we're ever going to see again. Because to me, the no one we're ever going to see again applies to the two women from the night before. Mm-hmm. But don't try to make it seem like it wasn't women and that they weren't up here in your room. It's really disrespectful to your wife when like, this is obviously going to come out. There's no way this is going to be kept a secret forever. Yeah.
I think he's like trying to feel out what Harper suspects and what she knows so that he can like tailor his story accordingly. Like that's the vibe that I got when he's asking like, what are you worried about? I mean, I think that it's very possible that Ethan would have been forthright about what happened and they would have fought it out and they would have made it through it. But I think that for whatever reason, he is kowtowing to what Cameron wants and not blowing up Cameron's spot here.
Bro code, bro.
Oh, you think the reason he didn't say anything was to protect Cameron?
Bro code.
I think that has complicated it. I think like he maybe was, of course, he was going to hesitate to tell Harper even outside of the promise he made. Like, let's say he hadn't made the promise. He would have had a problem still telling her. But I think
he has described him as honest to a fault.
So, like, I think it's really, and again, it's really telling that he threw up right after he made that promise. So I think it, like, in some way goes against what he stands for. But it's not great. Ethan, we need you to do better. Harper needs you to do better because poor Harper, the way like her stress and anxiety about this is just manifesting itself in like the physical and like the way you called out Dr. Amanda, the way like the white noise, white lotus, white noise gets like amplified and she's kind of dissociating in a way that Tanya could never. Like this is actual dissociating. Perhaps Tanya, read a book. But it's really hard to watch. It's so hard to watch her go down this really dark path. She's wearing sunglasses. She can't even sit still. She's she's not herself, and she's just trying to avoid it. It's really hard.
Shout out to Abu Plaza. I thought like she's been really stellar in all of these episodes, but this episode especially, I thought she really nailed. There has to be a lot of emoting in your face when you're being silent and when a lot of the work is happening behind the scenes with the cinematography and, like you said, the white noise. You really have to work extra hard to, like, get across that emotion on screen. And I just thought, like, she looked both devastated and numb simultaneously in such a believable way of, like, yeah, I just found out this really awful thing about my husband and I don't know what to do. And you're expected to just go to dinner with this other couple and you have no time to even process what's going on.
Jess, I love your top. It's so cute.
So cute.
I couldn't even fit into it 2 months ago. Ugh, baby weight.
But for Harper's part in this, Ariel and Jess, I'm curious both of you feel. Do we think that she handles this well? Like, is hiding the condom and sitting on this and, like, keeping it to herself, trying to see if Ethan, like, sort of testing Ethan to see what he will admit. Mm-hmm. Is this the right way to proceed?
It's the way that I'm laughing already. It's the way that I would have handled it. So for me, it was
so passive aggressive, Ariel.
No, I would say it's more Pisces emotional devastation. Like, you don't even know, like, you're still processing it. And I think it's telling, right? Like, is there a world in which, like, yes, he has done this thing that she believes he's incapable of, but is it because she has been activated in some way by Daphne? Like, arguably, would she have handled this differently had it happened before the night she spent in Noto? Mm-hmm. I think that's really interesting to consider. I think for sure, always, yes, the mature thing to do is, like, this is how I'm feeling, and this is why, and I really need to talk to you about it. But, like, I'm human.
But
in
this case, she is the victim. And so, like, as long as she's not hurting another person, right? Like, how she reacts is the right way for her. What she does is definitely not what I would have done. Again, Ariel says, like, that was the Pisces way to react. You cheat on a fire sign. Oh my God. Like, the entire building is in flames. Like, I'm just telling you.
You're gonna hear Jess roar.
If I find a condom in a couch, like, I'm probably gonna take a minute to process it. But then, like, we get a knock, knock, knock from our friends. I'm like, we're not coming to dinner. Goodbye. And then,
dinner,
like,
canceled.
It is all out war. Like,
we're canceling
not,
tribal tonight.
Yeah, I am not able to handle myself with maturity in the way that Harper does. No, there will be a tantrum and it will be bad. But I think how she handles it makes sense for the character. Like, it is brilliant writing, and I think it was absolutely how a character like Harper would just, like, kind of like fall into themselves and try to deal with it internally. And especially Amanda, like, she is so astute, and like you said, she just picks things apart and she wants to make sure she has the details to try to catch him in a lie before she accuses him of anything.
Yes. And this is shout out to the Vanity Fair Still Watching pod, which is also covering the White Lotus. I listened to that, and one of the hosts pointed out that, like, she's a lawyer, right? So she has the evidence and she's going to get his testimony on the record before she shows her hand. And, like, I think that that's very much what she did this episode. And from the perspective of getting a conviction and finding fault, I think that it's very savvy of her. But from the perspective of, like, I'm having an emotional reaction and I need to understand what happened, I don't necessarily think that this is, like, the thing that's best for their relationship or the thing that's best for, like, what Harper's emotional needs are right now, but very, very believable in terms of who this character is.
Yeah. And I love the setup for next episode, right? Where she just leaves the condom out on the sink countertop, like, very much on display. Like, she leaves it in a place that he obviously is going to see it. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, the payoff to that is going to be really fun. I love that as, like, a television move.
It's going to be excruciating, Jess. It's
I know.
Yeah.
I love the drama, Amanda. I love the drama. And it's very dramatic.
I couldn't help myself. is what, like, I'm trying to think through, like, what Harper will, I mean, there is nothing to explain, right? Because there's no world in which Ethan will be like, why did you handle it like this? Why did you leave the condom wrapper on the thing?
He's like, really? That's what you want to talk about?
Yeah,
he's
not gonna, a leg to stand on. Yes.
But I love the idea of, like, she, the extent, again, of, like, the devastation that she couldn't even, period, right? Like, the, for most of the day after she found out. And all she could muster was unburying it. And plate and moving it and placing it and then leaving it alone. Like, I think that's,
and this,
that makes
and
sense.
I, what I absolutely love about this show and this specific season of the show is we get the, we can do these parallel storylines of Cameron and Daphne and Harper and Ethan and kind of guess how they would react to these situations very differently, how these relationships are so different. Because Cameron and Daphne, we get like, Daphne saying she knows he's cheated on her at least once. She suspects that he does it other times and how this is the game they play. She talks about the game where, like, he gets FOMO and I'm away from him and he doesn't like that, but I just do what I want. And when she returns, they're in bed. And again, they're very cuddly. They're very kissy. They're very like,
never leave me again.
Yeah. He says, never leave me again. And she goes, I won't. And he says, promise. And I'm like, this, okay. I love Theo James. Like, he, his butt is just like out of this world. And I thought him in Time Traveler's Wife, he's brilliant.
Jess, can you be the official man butt correspondent for Post Show Recap?
Absolutely.
Coming to you live.
I adore a man butt. There's just nothing like it. You know, it's just like, they love to show women's breasts on television, but like, there's nothing like a man butt on your screen, especially when you have like Lucia grabbing it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just great.
Jess, for the record, you are not alone on this hill.
And they're always, I can imagine like being an actor and being like, oh my gosh, my butt is going to be seen on camera. Like, I have to like primp it, you know, you got to like get it ready.
Is that what they do?
What do you think they do?
They use like a lash curler, but like,
they extra lotion that trainer. Day. I'm just saying, they have to get it ready for camera.
Do your squats, people.
That's what it, yes, the squats. They definitely do squats.
Incredible.
I don't even know where I was, but it's like, oh, right.
You got lost in the man butt.
Got lost in the butt.
It's just like a nice little pillow. Anyway, so Cameron is truly a despicable human being, and he is so controlling. And for him to say, like, never leave me again, promise, like, is very, very manipulative. And Daphne is manipulative too. Like, I think they both play this game, but it disgusts me when he says, never leave me again. It's, he's trying to do it in a very cutesy romantic way, but it reads very controlling.
But that's what she wanted, right? She wanted to make him feel desperate for her. So she left him.
You know he gets FOMO, Dr. Amanda, has severe abandonment issues. But what's interesting about Daphne, and it didn't really hit me until just now, is potentially the other shoe dropping on the situation with Cameron and the money, and like how fundamental of a lie that is beyond what she has quote unquote forgiven him for before, or like deluded herself a little bit before. I think I'm lying about how much money we have, and also it's basically a Ponzi scheme, seemingly, right? Like, as much information as we've been given about that. It's gonna be a rough pill for her to swallow.
It's not confirmed yet exactly what Cameron's money situation is, but here in this episode, we know that he doesn't have all of the money to pay Lucia and Mia. We also know that Daphne has gone on a shopping spree, and Christmas is going to be molto Italiano, so she's probably
the dark triad of Christmas.
She's probably spent a lot of that cash that maybe Cameron is going to owe to Lucia. I think that there's a lot being set up here, and not just the condom wrapper. We have some other threads that are going to pay off in the upcoming episode. There's another plot line that we haven't touched on yet, Jess, and I really want to get your take on our new character this episode. We have enter Quentin. Quentin and Mateo. We have our British expat who befriends Tanya because she's just so chic and fabulous.
Most women look like they're going to a funeral on the beach.
Not Tanya, never Tanya. Even when she was going to a funeral on the beach, she still looked fabulous. We saw her.
It's true. So, that's a good point.
Are we like taking Quentin at face value? Like, what is his interest in Tanya? Like, do we think that there's something else going on here? Or is he just, like many of us are, drawn to the unbelievable magnetism of Jennifer Coolidge?
I truly think that he, based on what Jack has said, where Jack has said like, oh, my uncle just like loves to bring in old hags and like give them tea. not that Jennifer Coolidge is an old hag because she's gorgeous. But I think this is just what he does. I view him as like a collector. Like he just, you see his friend group and he just collects people into his entourage and then just wants to show them what like the places that he visits have to offer.
But this is White Lotus season two. And we know that sex and money are transactional, right? Mm-hmm. That like the people, you know, traffic in their power and their influence and their money and their stuff. So like, all right, we have Quentin's parties, we have his boat, we have his villa in Palermo. We know why all of the cute guys in their little bathing suits are there. Maybe are these old hags, as Jack would say, not my words, old hags. Is Quentin somehow defrauding these women? Like, I'm just wondering if there could be some ulterior motive here. Like we heard about, you know, the European aristocrats who have like wonderful palazzos but no money. Like could there be like some sort of money making scheme? Like why does he want all of Tanya's life story? Like is he using information here to somehow defraud Tanya out of her fortune? Are we going to learn something about Jack and Quentin that makes them not just like the happy times, like, you know, people who come in and give these two women a fabulously good time? Is there an ulterior motive?
I do like the idea of we're so busy trying to pay attention to like Greg and figure out what's going on there that we like are paying less attention to this potential scam. And now I'm like, Jack, be honest with Portia. Like, I can see Jack being like, Portia, I have to tell you, this guy's a scam artist.
I have to tell
artist.
You about
I
my uncle.
You.
We throw the hags off of the island into the rocks.
It's a trap, isn't it?
It's a big scam, isn't it?
Get out of the sandbox, Portia.
Get out of the boat now. It's sinking, isn't it? We got to get out. Get your life jacket.
I'm obsessed like. With Ariel's precious.
Ariel, are you from Essex?
Also, is there a, like, okay, I saw one of the reviews that came in on the podcast was like, I need Ariel to sing the season two theme song.
Ariel, are you going to sing the season two
theme song?
And
let me tell you, every time the theme song comes on, even though there's no words to it, I mean, it's mostly just like, I don't know what it's called, but like, I have to do it. Like, right? You have to sing along with it.
Whoa.
Oh my God. See, I do this. I do it differently than
was
you.
That
do
vibrato?
It.
Is that what that's that
that's
more
was? Like the season one one? The season two one, I can't do this. I can't do the harp. I can't do a harp with my voice. It's too beautiful
it's
and
like,
hard. Unhinged. I love it.
Fantastic work.
Variety hour indeed.
You're welcome.
Well, let's get into our death watch, aka Greg Lies,
speaking
Who Dies.
Of beauty.
Speaking of killing something beautiful, let's get into death watch. So, Jess, we've like invited all of our guests to speculate about who they think is the most danger here. Do you have any pet theories for who is going to be the dead body or bodies at the end of the season?
B-O-D-Y-S.
Yeah, I think I've definitely had more theories now that, especially after this episode, with where we have this like house on this island that has like these massive cliffs, and that, and again, the way that Mike White and just the cinematography of all the water, the water being a character in and of itself in both seasons is like a great through line. And we're just seeing these waves crash up on this cliffside. I feel like whoever dies is going to die on this island. And now that we have Quentin inviting Tanya and Portia onto this island, I just feel like we're going to get a large grouping of our characters on that island, and that's where a death is going to happen. And so my assumption would be it's not just going to be Tanya and Portia and that gaggle of Quentin's guys, but I also think we're going to end up having the father, son, grandfather trio, along with Lucia and Lucia and Maya on the island all together at the same time.
Oh, that would be super awk. Is this going to be like Valentina pulling an Armand and being like, oh, we already have a boat that's going there. Let's just
I could totally see that happening, because Lucia again with her, like I Valentina killed me when she like obviously gives zero F's. She's really into Isabella, and she's just like, oh, I don't know, there's some jewelry store, just go walk and find it yourself. Like giving me Friday and I don't give an F vibes. I love her.
Yeah, you mentioned Dr. Mandy, you mentioned Armand, and that was very like the way he started to spin out at the end of episode, or excuse me, at the end of season one. And her a little bit now, like we have never seen her before be this outright rude to a guest. And
well, she did call Tanya Peppa Pig.
She did, but that was listen. But she invited.
She did look like Peppa Pig.
Right, and she asked her, "What do I look like?" And Valentina was just being honest. So that was like an invitation to be honest, and perhaps lost in translation, but. You know, now I'm thinking of Armand because of what you just said. And I'm like, who is on the verge of like spinning out? Like, I'm worried. I don't know. I guess about Harper as far as this episode. But like, I'm trying to keep in mind, like the people that are getting more emotionally activated as we get closer to the end that may like cause emotional reactions. I don't know.
I know this like whole season is about like sex and power and money and all of that. And I just in my heart of hearts really hope it's not Lucia and Mia, or like the two that I really hope are protected, because I think this world is cruel enough to these types of people. And so I just hope that like we're not going to be taking it out on them. Like if I had my pick, it'd be like Cameron 100%. But I just don't think with the way we saw Daphne like hopping and bopping on the beach, I just don't think it's going to be her or him. In that instance.
If you're like, if you're keeping your point total on your death card, I think that like the Lucia and Mia, you know, reference to like women who do what we do, sex workers always get punished in the end.
Yes.
It's like that would be the thing in this episode that sort of leans towards like maybe they are actually in trouble. Now we know that like Mia is potentially implicated in Giuseppe being, you know, hurt or maybe dead. So there is some danger still around these two characters. I actually have like a really sweet theory for something that could happen. I think that maybe, what do you guys think about this? Maybe Albie takes Lucia back to Los Angeles with him, because going to Los Angeles has always been her dream.
And then she's like, I won't go without Mia. And so they both get to go.
And then Mia becomes a singer and Lucy opens a shop. Wouldn't that be so sweet?
It would, which is why I don't think it's going to happen.
This is the only happy ending now that I see. This is the way forward.
Yeah. Los Angeles is her dream. She said it twice. And that's where... That's where Albie lived.
I didn't even catch that first or the second time. Yeah. Toxic male to me.
I hope Greg comes back and hits him who's dead.
So Greg could die. So we have one. So if we're going by Greg's timeline, I still think that it's possible Greg doesn't come back. This was the first day of Greg being gone, mm-hmm. correct? And then
day two, we have one more episode without him.
One more episode where we definitely don't have Greg. And we think this episode is going to be Tanya and Portia on the boat. The points for Tanya being the one to die are, the tarot card reading about the crazy lady commits suicide. The reference to the old battle axe in a heap at the bottom of the rocks. We get that in this episode from Quentin. I think that now introducing Quentin into the equation and the possibility that he might be on something nefarious is interesting. So I can still see Tanya in the running as somebody who might die.
I just don't. I'm wondering if, like, we know we're getting a season 3. I guess they didn't know that at the time, but I'm wondering, like, is Jennifer Coolidge going to be the through line with all 3 seasons, and that it's always Tanya going to different White Lotuses?
Yeah, and I actually don't love that. So I think selfishly, I am actually really into the idea of her dying here and like it being like she's
taking her off the board.
Taking her off the board, exactly.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
I don't think we need her anymore. I think we can go to another White Lotus. I'm so sorry.
My mother.
Blasphemy, I know. I'm sorry, mother. But like, I don't know if we need Tanya.
See, Amanda, this is why she calls most women a drip. Because you're trying to kill her off.
Oh, everyone's trying to kill me or get my money.
Everyone's so down and sad.
Poor Portia. She really needs to get out of there.
We definitely got some imagery, I think, of Harper by the water and by the rocks, which made me concerned for her safety as well.
Yeah, I'm really concerned that something is going to happen where, like, her and Ethan don't resolve the cheating situation. And so she just assumes he did. Again, cheating is all relative, but like she assumes he had sex with someone else. And therefore she then cheats on him, right? Like there's been vibes between her and Cameron in different situations. Yes. Right? We have the whole, again, not to bring up Theo James's butt again, we did see it and she did see it. And there was a moment where like, bro, why did you move to the middle of the room to get changed? So she could see your nice butt? Like ? So I think there could be like a scandalo between all that.
Scandalo. I love it. I love when you speak Italian to me, Jess.
bonjour. No, that's French.
Bonjour, no.
Yeah, scandalo is Spanish.
Harper and Cameron definitely exchange more like knowing glances with each other. There were a couple times in this episode. This wasn't a big episode for the two of those characters together, but I think that they still maintain that through line of there being some sort of tension between the two of them. And I really like your theory, Jess, that maybe Harper is going to make an assumption that's going to give her the license to do something, or she's going to want to take revenge on him.
Right.
We know that Cameron, you know, has all of these issues, and maybe he's going to try to, you know, for his own ego, is going to need to feel like he has some power over Ethan. And that's why he's going to want to maybe make Ethan and Harper's relationship like as bad as he thinks his and Daphne's is, or, you know, take them down a notch because he knows that they're honest with each other and all of that. So I can see him sort of trying to piss all over something that Ethan has, because that's what he needs to feel like the bigger man.
Yeah, he's marking his territory. This is mine too, like now, bro.
People piss on things, yeah.
Although we know that Cameron is a big fan of bro code, Ariel, and bro code usually means you can't sleep with your bro's wife.
I don't.
Are you familiar? Could you, Ariel? Would you read from the bro code for us? Will you take out your scroll of
this? I have this bro code Bible, and it has been deconsecrated, but it still has rules about this kinds of thing. No, absolutely not. I burned my copy. I don't know what, and I feel like it's changed a little bit. There's like the traditional bro code, like the toxic traditional bro right. code, and there's probably like a little bit more of like an updated bro code.
Mm-hmm. Like Albie's bro code Bible is different from Dominic's bro code Bible. Is
exactly,
different from
Bert.
Yeah, this
exactly.
isn't your grandfather's bro code.
No,
okay?
Hopefully not. This isn't Bert's. This isn't Bert's Bible.
Well, that's great. Do you have any other theories, Jess, that we should entertain here before moving on to one of our favorite segments, which is F. Murray Abraham?
The only other thing I have my eye on is Rocco, because of how much Valentina seems to despise Rocco. He's automatically on my list of like, again, we saw him in the whole death scandal situation.
Yeah, he remains alive in that opening scene. He's the one who tells Valentina that it's somebody's. Yeah. There are some guests have died.
I just feel like between the Rocco Isabella Valentina storyline, like something is going to happen there, because Valentina makes a point to be like, Isabella, if men can be aggressive and if they're being, you need to tell me. Like, Valentina has like the cutest little crush on Isabella, which is problematic because she's her boss. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's something that's going to happen there where like Rocco is going to keep talking to Isabella and Valentina is going to have a big issue with it.
Yeah. I mean, this probably won't go all the way in the Armand Dillon direction from last season, but of course, once we see this sort of workplace attraction from a supervisor to an employee, you have to think that there's going to be, I mean, I don't think that Mike White's going to do the exact same thing, but this right. has got to have some sort of payoff, right?
You can't just like poop in the suitcase two seasons in a row. But yes, I agree that there's going to be
as the adage goes.
I read that straight from the Broco Bible.
Instead of jumping the shark, you poop the suitcase.
Oh my God, did they just poop the suitcase?
It honestly works.
It does work. We can make it work. So we didn't get a lot of feedback, unfortunately, because we had to, because of scheduling reasons, we had to record this one pretty close to the premiere of the episode. But we did hear from our friend Lindsay Wilson, who said that watching this episode was among the most stressful 52 minutes of my life.
It depends if you like cringe TV, right?
Right.
Because literally the moment that Albie goes upstairs to Quentin's party and you see him and Portia's trying to make an excuse of like, no, Tanya needs me. I full on held my like throw pillow up to my face and was like, no, because it's so awkward.
Tanya needs me to drink rosé and flirt with this guy. I am sorry. I can't leave.
All she needed to say was, Albie, I'm so sorry, but he has a British accent. And shrug her shoulders and move on.
He's a Brit, isn't it?
It's a Brit, isn't it?
But if you have any feedback about my terrible accent or anything about the show, we do welcome it. We also heard from Rachel, who was very sweet and complimentary. You two are hysterical and so on point. And she was quick to, which we love. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
She helped me think of a sentence that I was trying to remember about causation and correlation. So thank you. We do appreciate being corrected and getting information thrown at us. Shall we get into the game, Dr. Amanda?
Yeah. So my F. Murray Abraham triad. Maybe this is a dark triad. I don't know. I was thinking we have some big secondary characters that are introduced in this episode. And I thought we could go, or who had big roles in this episode rather. So my F. Murray Abraham for the week, Jess, is Quentin, Jack, and Giuseppe.
Oh, okay. I mean, obviously I'm effing Jack. Like, there's literally no chance that I wouldn't pick Jack for that. Like, have you seen his cute underwear?
I don't like Jack. I don't like him.
I would.
He's sketchy, but he's cute.
No, what do you pick, Eric?
I was like, just once? Like, don't you marry him so that he's around? I don't want to have the other two around. Wait, who is it? It's Quentin.
No, Quentin. Quentin's rich.
Giuseppe.
Quentin will treat me like a queen.
Yeah.
Plus he's gay, so like you marry him for like the money and the prestige.
Right. Yeah. I'm still wondering what his ultimate
He's got a villa. He's got a boat.
I think we definitely Abraham Giuseppe, whether it's by pill or.
Oh, he done been Abrahamed already. Yeah.
You can try to F him, but he's not going to make anything.
It'll work out. Yeah. I don't need to go through all that work. I'm not running to the beach. I'm not running back. I'm not getting pills.
Really, truly, Mia tried. She ran. She over tried her everywhere. Darling.
Look, if Mia can't do it, I do not presume that I can. Okay.
With that actual melodious voice, and she can't handle it, then I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what hope there is for the rest of us.
Yeah, my final answer is F. Jack, Murray, Quentin, and definitely Abraham Giuseppe, 100%. After that comment about, like, how else would you women get to the top without us men? Like, get out of here, Giuseppe.
Can we double? Can it be F. Murray, Abraham, and we just double Abraham Giuseppe?
Double Abraham.
Double Abraham, yeah. I kind of wanted to Abraham Jack, but I feel like you're really backed into a corner then. So I think that just, I think you made the right move.
Yeah, they're trying to put your butt in a corner. And
like, Amanda, Giuseppe would never put on cute underwear for you. Like, he literally never would.
I wouldn't want to see it, even if he did. I'm sorry.
Just saying, like, at least Jack is like...
Skifo.
Incredible stuff. Wow, I can't believe there are only 3 episodes left.
Oh, I'm so sad about it.
What are we going to do?
I don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, we're going to find out some mysteries, the answers to some of these mysteries.
And we think, right, it makes no sense that we're going to find out the identity of all the bodies, maybe one in the penultimate, but like probably not till the finale, right, is when we get like the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, I think that things are going to heat up. There'll probably be some more of these misdirects along the way, but I would be surprised if we lose any characters outright before the finale. We'll find out. Maybe we've lost Giuseppe, but you know, he made an impression while he was here.
I mean, really did. He definitely made an impression on the floor when he fell onto it.
Table for 4, please.
That was an incredible moment. Incredible moment. Sorry, I can't be bothered. Very Valentina of
that just tells you all you need to know about Cameron, that like a man literally just falls on the floor and looks to be dying, and he's just like, we're here for dinner.
The conversational equivalent of like stepping over the body, honestly. Mm-hmm.
He probably had to do that too on the way to the table. Well, thank you so, so much, Jess, for joining us to unpack everything with this episode. You've been absolutely incredible bringing all of your knowledge of love triangles and and the 90s shows to bear. This has been so much fun.
Nothing.
Thank you so much for having me.
Nothing but the best from Jess.
I know.
Whenever you see a butt on HBO, just know.
Jess Sterling gets the her test. Wings.
Ay, ay, ay. But yes, thank you so much, Jess, for coming on. Please remember to subscribe to the White Lotus podcast feed. PosherRecaps.com/White Lotus. If you need the URL, search, rate, review, subscribe. It's super, super helpful. Jess, where can people find you, and where can people search and review and rate other things that you're working on?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter while it still exists at the Jess Sterling. I'll be wherever the next, you know, wave takes me whenever Twitter goes down. But the main place you can always find me is in the Posher Recaps Discord, because I'm in there more than I'm in anywhere else on the internet. You can become a patron, PosherRecaps.com/Patreon, and join us there. You could also hear me on the podcast for Posher Recaps for Mythic Quest. We're covering season 3 with Adam. It's been so much fun. I love Mythic Quest. It is like a very underrated sitcom on
Apple TV.
It's
I get good vibes. I get good vibes.
It's really good. It's short, very bingeable. And so I'm loving podcasting about that. As well as, of course, Community is back with season 4, which is just a terrible season, but like I'm loving podcasting about it. Mm-hmm. So just join us in the misery, because I really don't like season four, but Josh seems to like it so far. So Wallace is loving it. So join us there, of course. And then you could also hear me on Shit 90 Shows Taught Me, talking Dawson's Creek, talking Boy Meets World. I'll have you know, Dawson lost his virginity recently, and we had a field day talking about it.
James Vander what?
Yes. And like, he was looking good. Like, I'm not usually like a big Dawson fan, but like, let me tell you, he could get it. So check us there. Check us out there on Shit 90s Shows Taught Me. That's at Shit 90s Pod on Twitter and Instagram. We have a website, shit90spod.com. If you want to go catch up on our backlog. It's almost Christmas season, baby. So we're going to be coming out with some holiday content. Mm.
We love that. Dr. Amanda, you're on Twitter. I know you're looking for other social media. How's that going?
You know, it's going. I've built my little outposts. I'm sort of like just waiting so that I have them there if I need them. But right now, the best way to find me is on Twitter, where I am at Dr. Amanda R. I'm also in the Post Show Recaps Discord, and that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And, you know, until we meet on the next dumpster fire of a social media website, I'll be holding it down on Twitter.
The next sinking ship.
I love to imagine like Amanda just like standing there with like a plate full of like welcome cookies on every like social media platform, like just ready for the arrival.
Dumping the one that gets canceled. Like, no, that's not it.
Oh my God. Amanda is Rocco with the platter of champagne glasses.
It was too small, that platter.
It was too small. I know. You need to get a bigger
for Mastodon.
Platter.
What are you doing?
That's why Mastodon hasn't taken off yet.
Not enough champagne.
I Rocco'd it.
I'm also on Twitter at that other Ariel. Speaking of ships, I'm covering the creepy Netflix show 1899 with my co-host Grace and DM Philly. That's been super fun. And also covering movies every week with Grace over on Posture Recaps Theater. Until I guess that's everything. Until the next operatic episode, everyone, hold on to your butts as we get into the last the last section of these episodes. I'm scared for everyone, but as usual, we will be back for episode 5.
Arrivederci.
That's up for now. Bye.